I would like to elaborate on the second challenge in the Expertise Incubator. Here's how I describe it on the website, theexperticeincubator.com. The second challenge is to design and execute on some kind of research project while you're in the program, and we've got 3 months during this second challenge to focus on this. It may take longer than 3 months, but we have 3 months to focus on it. The goal is ultimately to develop thought leadership content or valuable intellectual property. And intellectual property in my world is your expertise packaged and made usable by non-experts.
Shall we play a game?
So count up how many decisions you've seen your clients make in absence of data that would support making a better decision or would improve the outcomes of that decision. Now, add up the number of decisions where you have seen some form of objective or semi-objective data or structured data that was available to help make that decision. Now compare the two. It's pretty simple. I would bet that most of the time, far more than 50% of the time, you are witness to your clients making decisions in absence of data or structured data that would assist with the decision making. In other words, the decisions are made on some other basis other than data. They might be made on a hunch, on intuition, on best practice, which may have originally come from some form of data, but it's really the sort of deposit of data or an artifact of that data becomes best practice. Or they might just be some variation of guessing that informs your client's decisions. Our mindset during this second challenge is we are performing an act of service by undertaking the task of doing research. We are perhaps discovering something new. We are perhaps validating a hunch or an intuition that we ourselves have had. But more than anything, as you start to think about this, what this second challenge is, and you listen to this series of audio updates about the challenge, I want you to think of it more than anything as an act of service that is directed at your best clients or the kind of clients that would be a level up to you, but you would like to attract. Now, those of you that understand the idea of motivated reasoning are probably starting to have some red flags show up because you're hearing me talk about motivations for research that are something other than a pure, unalloyed desire to learn. And you might be wondering, is this motivation going to affect the research? And I'll just simply say no, but that's a valid concern. That's something to be on guard against, but that doesn't undermine in some complete way what we're doing. What the research you decide to do ultimately looks like can vary quite a bit. So what I'd like to do, instead of talking specifically about what the research might look like, is to talk about how it produces value. And there's two ways that it produces value. It produces value to you, and it produces value to your clients and your prospective clients. I have heard the following saying attributed to Peter Drucker, and the saying is, all profit comes from risk-taking. I'm a little wary of absolutist statements like that, but there's something there that's compelling. This idea that some of the more profitable activities are also some of the more risky activities. That would be a much softer way of saying, I think, what Peter Drucker is saying. But he says it in a very absolute way. All profit comes from risk-taking. So I'm not sure that this is absolutely true, but it is a very useful lens through which to view this idea of doing research with the ultimate goal of creating some form of intellectual property. And the reason I think this is a useful lens to look at this through is because the value of the research, the profit that we're talking about, does not come from your abilities or your expertise as a researcher. It comes from the mere, somewhat audacious, very proactive action of even doing the research in the first place. So, in other words, when you do this research, you're taking a risk. You are investing time and effort, perhaps even some money, to carry out the research. That's a risk. And the profit from that research may come from the value of the research, but mostly it comes from the fact that you took the initiative to do it, that you conceived it, that you put in the time and effort and the empathy for your client's situation and the desire to make things better. And you brought all those together into a very simple act, a very simple task of this research project. And the value of that just comes from you taking the initiative. The reason I emphasize this is I do not want you to think that the value of what you produce is primarily depends upon your abilities as a researcher. It does not. There are very simple ways to do what I'm going to call research, but really might amount to simply organizing information or organizing data in a way that's useful. What you're doing is finding an opportunity to take the chaotic, the disorganized, and make it structured and useful. And that might be all there is to it. It certainly can go beyond that. But to me, this really brings out this idea that the value is not so much the amazingness of the research itself, it's the fact that you stepped up to the plate and did it. So again, back to Peter Drucker's statement, the profit in this situation comes from you taking a risk and doing some research. This is definitely a speculative thing. It may not work. You should be okay with that. You'll learn something from doing it, and the next effort will be better as a result of that learning. Creating intellectual property that's based on some kind of research that you carry out is a simple and, I believe, very underutilized way to differentiate yourself to clients. So this is part of the value that research has to you. It creates very clear differentiation. A lot of your competitors or your peers or other people who have similar skills as you will make very similar claims about what their skills can do. They'll say and perhaps be able to prove that they have a high degree of competence when it comes to whatever it is that you do. But usually the thing that they will not do is take away some time that they could spend serving clients and therefore creating short-term revenue, and invest that in some form of research that pays dividends over the long term. This is an underutilized way to create difference, real meaningful difference between what you do and what your clients do. When you are working from a data set or a set of conclusions that you've arrived at through your research, or you have better data than others who have similar skills, you can legitimately claim that you are different from them. And this tends to move you into a leadership position because it kind of flips things. Instead of being reactive and saying, okay, prospective client, tell me what needs to happen here. Tell me what you're trying to do. And then you doing that, you flip things. Before you've ever spoken to the client, you have done some proactive, somewhat scalable problem solving with the goal of helping them. You have anticipated their needs. You have looked further down the road to see what's coming than your competitors have, and you have created a solution for a problem that you suspect is going to be presented to you by one or more clients, but you've done it before the client ever asked. So instead of creating individual bespoke solutions, you're moving to group semi-standard solutions, meaning solutions that can apply to a group of clients, not all clients. Maybe just a very small subset of your clients would actually need the insight or the data that your research produces. But it is a group of clients. And instead of it being custom for each client, you're looking across what you might think of as your best clients. And you're saying, what do they need to reduce uncertainty or produce better results or lower risk? So what you're doing is you're using this research that you're going to do to create best practices. And those best practices are not universally applicable. Again, they might only apply to a subset of your clients, but they're probably chosen specifically to help what would be your best clients. So one way to think about this research is to think about the unknowns that would present themselves at the outset of a new project. To accept the task of figuring out those unknowns before the client ever hires you. And by doing that, you have reduced uncertainty for a group of prospective clients all at once rather than for a single client. Again, you would probably focus on what would be your best clients, either at your current level of credibility and access or at some future better level of credibility and access. Your research can do basically three things for clients, which I'm going to focus on in just a moment. And being able to do those things for clients allows you to charge a premium rate. So that's part of the value to you. To summarize the value to you of doing this research, it ultimately can make your business more profitable. That profit comes from risk-taking, from saying, I'm not sure, but I think that this research will produce value for both me and my clients. So that's the risk-taking. It creates differentiation between you and your competition, and it can allow you to increase your rates and charge more premium rates or higher fees. To your clients, this research can do three things. It can reduce uncertainty, reduce risk, and assist with decision-making. So I definitely am eager to tip my hat to Douglas Hubbard, who wrote a book called How to Measure Anything, which I recommend you read, because it frames the idea of collecting data or measuring things in a business context rather than an academic research context. And both are incredibly useful, incredibly powerful contexts. But we are, in this situation, focused on the business context. And in the business context, reducing uncertainty is the goal of research. It is not to achieve peer-reviewed status and be published in a peer-reviewed publication, which is a much higher standard of accuracy and rigor than you need to achieve. The main point of Douglas's book is that surprisingly small amounts of data collected through surprisingly, I guess let's say casual methods, or by contrast to academic research, surprisingly casual methods. So surprisingly small amounts of data collected through surprisingly casual methods can produce surprisingly large reductions in uncertainty. And that's the purpose of this. I mean, that's one of the three things that your research can do, is to, if we go back to the beginning of this audio update and that game that I said, count up the number of decisions that you've seen made in the absence of helpful data. I think you can see the relationship between the research you do and what you help your clients with, which is, if it's not now, ultimately it will become helping them make better decisions. That may be mixed in with some implementation work, but the advisory work you do is really the focus of this research. How can we help our clients make better decisions? Well, one of the ways to do that is to reduce uncertainty. Very closely related is the second form of value that this research creates for your clients, which is reducing risk. So uncertainty is, well, we just don't know what the right choice is. Risk is, we made a choice and there's a chance that it goes badly. So these two are very related, the idea of decision-making with a high degree of uncertainty and making risky decisions. Clients will pay for you to reduce risk. You can think of it as insurance that they would add on to protect an investment. And the investment might be the investment in your services, or it might be some other form of spending money or investing that they're doing. But in those situations, it's really nice for a business to be able to pay extra for something that meaningfully reduces risk. And that extra could be your research. It's something they could pay for independently, but they're most likely to pay for it bundled with your services as a part of hiring you, because they see that you come with this extra sort of, you could think of it as a sort of briefcase of data that you've gathered that you will bring to the engagement with you and use it, that data, to make the engagement go better. And if it's truly packaged intellectual property, it is something that could be sold independently or delivered independently without you being there. And if it's not packaged, then it might require your presence and your mind available to interpret this data. Either way, it can accomplish the outcome of reducing risk. The third thing, which again is very closely related to the other two forms of value, but the third form of value that this research can create for your clients is to assist them with decision-making. When should we do this versus that? How do we decide between these options? The data that you collect can be useful in making those kinds of decisions. So in a way, these are three parts of the same thing: better decisions. So let me wrap this up. Again, you're doing this research speculatively. So the risk that you are taking on is very simple. You're doing speculative work with an uncertain return on investment for you. You are also, to a much lesser extent, risking social status and short-term revenue or profitability while you divert some of the effort that you would put into client work into this research. That's the risk, but that's also the genius of this. So many of the alternatives to hiring you, your competitors, will just simply say no to taking this kind of risk. Even though the actual work is very easy, sometimes very simple, it does not require much in the way of fancy expertise. It just requires buckling down and doing it. And to me, that's the genius of it. It doesn't require much from you, just a willingness to take a risk that few others are willing to take. So that's most of what I wanted to say about the sort of overall idea of this second challenge. It is part of the larger arc of the expertise incubator in that it should culminate in something that is a sort of packaged form of intellectual property. That's something we focus on in the fifth challenge. And the main reason that we're starting the research now, but focusing on packaging it later, is to allow enough time for a more extensive research project to unfold. This research, again, is risky, it's speculative, but when it pays off, when it works, and I'm going to provide as much as I can in terms of guidance about how to make it pay off and how to make it work. But when it pays off and works, it produces wonderful value for you and your clients. It's a truly sharing the value sort of thing. The value to you shows up in terms of profitability and differentiation and some other secondary benefits. And the value to your clients shows up in them having an easier time making good decisions that produce good results.